This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Rasslan, today we have the return of, to BFM, somebody who used to work here at BFM, and she does nothing, Azur Rahman.
Hello.
Great to have you back. And also the return of, after a very long time, he's a medical doctor, and he's also a member of the MACC, the Malaysian Association of Chinese Comedians. Mm-hmm. It's Dr. Jason Leong.
Hello, hello. Nice to be back.
Great to have you. And our three topics this week are, topic number one is knowing your city through Waze. Topic number two is in defense of, well, doing nothing. And finally, topic number three is mental health for men.
That's right.
So, topic number one, knowing your city through Waze. Now, your mode of transport, it conditions the way you imagine your city, mm-hmm. literally the shape of your city. Mm. If you travel by car, then you would see it differently from a person who goes by train or bus. So I think it's fair to say amongst KLites that nobody knows the names of any roads.
Untrue.
Some roads, but not all. I mean, there are a lot of roads you don't know the names of. Also, people don't have a great sense of north, south, east, and west.
Oh, definitely.
Definitely. Yeah.
So you don't know if, you don't know how Churras, say, connects with Kalanajaya.
What's the lee of the land, basically, right?
Yes. Yeah. Mm. So, for instance, I know that the Federal Highway, with the Federal Highway, you can go from Petaling Jaya, Subang Jaya, to Shah Alam.
Yes.
So if ever I need to go to Shah Alam, mm-hmm. I will find my way through to the Federal Highway and then sit on the Federal Highway, working my way progressively up the only way that I know. Even though my starting point may have been right next to Shah Alam. Yes.
I like how you say progressively. It implies that you're fighting through traffic on the Federal Highway.
Yeah.
You do, though.
Yes.
You do.
Right.
And if you're in a car, then you're sort of hermetically sealed. Whereas if you travel by a train, you actually get a sense of, you will get to see inside people's homes more on a train. Because you go through the backs of places.
Ah.
And also, I think if you go on a train, you have more of a sense of the rivers.
Right.
Whereas in a car, you have no idea what a river is. You don't know how that river connects to that river. And then came along this thing called Waze.
Mm.
And Malaysians are the highest per capita users of Waze in the world.
Interesting.
Yeah. The rest of the world will be using Google Maps. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, Waze really makes sense here.
Yes.
And through Waze, when I sort of just give myself up to Waze.
As have I, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then it shows you, if you pay attention, that certain places connect to certain places.
I see.
You know? I had no idea that, actually, this place is really close to this place.
Ah.
And I also had no idea that there is actually an alternative way to get to that place.
What was your biggest aha moment then with Waze?
I've recently moved, but in where I used to live before, I always thought that there was only one road, Jalan Ulu Klang, that took me from where I always start to where I end up, you know, home. It's the only way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then I discovered there's this new village. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know of the new village, but I didn't realize you could go around the back of this new village in Kuala Lumpang and go through the new village and then connect up. It's like, my God. Yes. I had no idea these places connected.
Yeah. Waze has made me realize how much I don't know about Kuala Lumpur, the city itself. Because, like, you know, in Klang Valley, Petaling Jaya, I can find my way around it, you know. I won't get lost as much. But when I'm in Kuala Lumpur, just to get from one hotel to this conference to that seminar, I need Waze. Because I don't know how to navigate the roads and the little roads and all the, and to avoid the jams, I have no idea how to navigate Kuala Lumpur.
Because you're a PJ boy.
That's right, PJ boy.
You just go to Jaya, you just go to you don't go beyond the confines of Wan Utama, that kind of thing. So, you know, KL is a mystery to you.
Really postcode-ish.
The thing is with Waze, though, I feel for certain neighborhoods, because I use it sometimes as well, especially during traffic jams and everything. So now what were neighborhood roads have become main arteries, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel for these guys in like the middle of SS2 or Section 21 who are, you know, basically just next to the LDP, and suddenly they find what used to be a quiet road is now just completely filled up thanks to Waze, right?
Absolutely.
Especially during peak hours, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So and of course, the people who are driving through there have no idea of sort of where they're going through. I mean, you're just, you know, just fixated on the destination.
But you think you're taking the fastest route when it's just actually 2 minutes faster.
Still, right? 2 minutes, yeah. Let's destroy this neighborhood to save me 2 minutes. Because 2 minutes a day is 10 minutes in 1 week.
Yeah, yeah.
So in 1 month, you save 1 hour.
But I think though that it has given...
This is why Waze does so well in KL. Exactly.
But I think it has given me a greater sense of sort of spatial awareness of Kuala Lumpur.
Yes.
I think I now can find that there are connections between points C and D.
That you never knew existed.
That I never knew. Because I know how to get to point C, D, E, F, but only from point A.
The fact that you still mention going to Shah Alam on the Federal Highway says a lot about you, Cam.
It does actually. It dates me.
It does.
I think there are roads here which date you. So Federal Highway for me is like, it's just a beacon point. But I think because, you know, my KL was constructed in the 1960s and the 70s.
Along the Federal Highway.
Wow.
But I think for a lot of younger people, it's just a thing to avoid. It's just like whatever, Federal Highway.
It's like when my mom slips into things like, oh, Circular Road. You know,
yeah.
Like Lonnie Road. And I'm just like, okay.
Piccolo-ling.
That's when life was still in black and white, right?
Please, like, It was.
Update yourself. I have no idea what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Can I quickly tell you about the time Waze saved my life from being in a jam for like God knows how long, right? Uh-huh. This was the day after the 13th general elections. Mm. And then I think the then opposition called for a massive rally at Kelana Jaya. And I just finished my shift at this emergency department in Hospital Selayang. Okay? And I got word that there was going to be a massive rally. And I live in a condominium literally like a stone's throw away from the Kelana Jaya Stadium where the rally is going to be held. And I thought, oh no, there's going to be a massive jam. So luckily I had Waze. I turned on Waze and Waze gave me like another route which took 40 minutes. 20 minutes more than the usual route to go home. And this 40 minutes took me, like you said, the back alley, like through Sungai Besi or Sungai Buloh. I never knew that I could go back home from Selayang via Sungai Buloh to where I lived. And when I took this alternative route, as I reached the toll and I could turn off to my condo, I could see the traffic jam building up. And had I used the original route, I would have been stuck in the jam of people going into the stadium for, I think, up to 3 a.m. in the morning.
And so that saved your life.
And that saved my life.
But it's funny because, I mean, you know, after how many years that is, you wouldn't still be in that jam, obviously. And yet you remember the kind of the cheating of... the cheating of the jam as an achievement in your life that you will carry with you forever.
That is a big achievement for Klang Valley Ites, though.
That's right.
Cheating the jam, right?
I like that phrase, cheating the jam.
Yeah. See, meanwhile, though, I was in Istanbul. Uh-huh. I'll finish in 1 second, but I was in Istanbul, and I thought, okay, I'm just going to switch on Waze just to have a look. What the heck?
Yes.
And you know when you switch on Waze here and it says, like, 20,000 users nearby kind of thing?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Switching on in Istanbul, 14 users.
Wow.
Istanbul has a population, I think, almost the double the entire population of Malaysia.
Wow.
Only 14 people were using it.
What are they using in Istanbul?
I briefly spoke to an Istanbulite, and he said, we don't ask anybody anything.
Wow.
Yeah. So they just sit in a gym. So anyway, so we move on, though. Azura, in defense of, well, doing nothing.
Can I just amend that to being not productive? There's a difference there. But basically, this is article that popped up on Refinery 29, and it really just resonated with me by a Lauren Bravo in defense of being unproductive. Mm-hmm. So let's just examine where we are today. A lot of us are, you know, have grown up with the idea of capitalism, but your self-value, your self-worth is tied to being how productive you are. And fast forward to where we are now, everyone has a side hustle. Mm. Everyone's an entrepreneur, you know. Everyone has hashtag dua kerja, right? everyone has turned a passion into a project. Mm. But where has it led us? You know, we're burnt out. We're not happy. We don't feel that we're doing enough unless we can show on Instagram that I have done X, Y, Z during the whole weekend, mm-hmm. as opposed to just like lying in bed and not doing anything, which is completely fine.
Mm.
And I think because of that, we are unhappier as a result, you know. I mean, when I stopped working about 2 years ago at BFM, it was because my third baby was coming along. Mm. And there was some worry as to, what are you going to do now? So I felt like, yeah, what am I going to do, right? So I had this long list of things set up. Right? I'm going to do my child's fifth birthday party. It's going to be the best ever. I'm going to set her up for school. And my other son's going to go to kindergarten. I took up pottery. I was doing art projects with my kids every other day because I felt I needed to be productive. You know, this self-worth that's attached to being productive. And, you know, when you think about it, though, the worth that's being attached to being productive, you're also seeing at the same time, if you are a disabled person or if you are not able to work full time because you're caring for your parents, caring for your children, or, you know, caring for the community, you are not as worthy, right? Because we've been told that, you know, being productive is a way of contributing to society. You know, how much taxes you pay, right, is how worthy you are. But if you don't have people who are sweeping the roads and who are barely paying taxes because you don't even qualify to pay taxes, our roads would be dirty. So is he less worthy than someone who is working in a multi-million conglomerate doing a marketing job?
Right.
It's very Gattaca. I don't know if you've watched that movie before, right? You know, you've got Ethan Hawke, so good looking, but he wears glasses and he's deemed less worthy because, you know, he's a myopic.
Sorry. I thought you were making a judgment call. Because both Jason and I are wearing glasses.
I do wear glasses too, as well. I don't wear them all the time.
Well, Jason, your topic is going to be mental health.
Yes.
Right? And isn't, you know, being productive and working, isn't that, you know, keeps your mind engaged and keeps you sharp and everything?
Yeah, I think definitely. But I kind of understand where Azura is coming from. But I don't think most of us, we don't look down on people who are disabled or caring for parents as not worthy. I think there is the general criticism about people who are able-bodied, but they choose to let life pass them by. They choose to not do anything, and with the talents or the capabilities, they just waste their time doing anything.
Okay, I want to draw a distinction between people who are not working at all and who are, like, you know, dependent on handouts.
That's right.
And people who are working just enough to you know, pay their bills, to earn a decent living, but are just doing their 9 to 5, you know, but they're not doing more than that. They're not doing hashtag dokerja. They're not turning their passions into projects. You know, baking, oh, great, I can bake and, you know, tempah kuih for other people as well, you know, and make more money. Yeah. You know, but that's how we have valued our members of society. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, what did you do on the weekend? Oh, nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
If you see, even that, wow, I've been really productive. Oh, you had a great day. You know, good job, yeah, you know. Job.
And you Instagram it.
Yeah, and you Instagram it. And you put it on Insta story and that kind of thing. But, I mean, why is there this guilt, you know, of not doing enough? Yeah. Why is there this need to be a multi-hyphenate? Wife/mother/daughter/whatever/everything, you know?
Yes.
Social activist slash film producer slash comedian.
Well, I think, Azura, a lot of that's going to have to be your own personal journey. but we can't solve all of it today.
But I think it's everyone's journey, though.
I think so, actually. Right? I've been doing a stint on co-hosting Evening Edition. And so on Evening Edition, you know, you put out a story, put out a call to people, and then people call in. And the responses to, you know, you name it, just about every topic is so utilitarian. And people are looking at something as that people must be useful. They must do something useful. But it's as if there's an imagined universal utility, a universal usefulness. you know, we must train these people so that they can be productive and useful. But actually, where you're coming from in your is a personal judgment on what is
useful,
what is considered useful.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
So, I mean, if you are in the corporate sector, you're going to be self-justifying and saying, we want people who will be useful, essentially drones.
Yes. You want a workforce, right?
Yeah.
Not human beings, it's a workforce.
Whereas if, I'm sure, Jason, as a doctor, would be thinking, how can people be useful in terms of, you know, creating well-being in society? So, there is no universal usefulness, I don't think.
I mean, like, Jason, you mentioned the word talent, you know. So even like creativity.
Yes.
And talent. People would say to me, oh, you're not working anymore. Oh, such a waste, lah. But, you know, why can't I just be quippy and funny for fun, right? Why must I turn it into a job, right?
Thank you, Azura. Let me tell you something, right? You just sparked a few memories in me. Recently, right, and this always happens after a good gig, Okay? If it's a bad gig, I understand. It's a good gig, right? A person will come up to me and ask, oh, Jason, you used to study medicine. You used to work as a doctor, right? And now, then I say, yeah, now I do comedy full-time. And they go, oh, isn't that such a waste? That is the literal sentence they say. And I don't know how to respond to that.
But how do you feel though? What's it?
I feel like, in my house, like, yeah. Why is it a waste? Didn't you just see me make people laugh, you know? And to them, like studying and working as a doctor, now that I've given it up, it's a waste. Right. But I feel like I'm doing, I'm happier now. So yes. Like, what's wrong with that, right?
Yes.
But so it's a personal thing. You feel happier. But I mean, do you also sort of think, but I'm doing a different service. I'm doing another wider service. Do you still need to kind of justify it in that sense?
Well, I think the first thing is I'm happier now. That is the first selfish thought, right? And the second is, well, I'm still making people happy, you know? Uh-huh. And also, if I had continued on being a doctor, I would have been maybe a mediocre doctor or...
And a miserable one.
And that would just force misery upon others, you know?
You might have ended up killing patients.
No. that wouldn't happen.
Extreme examples.
Azura, good luck with that. And in a moment, though, we're going to talk about men's mental health specifically here on A Bit of Culture on BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Azura Rahman, and Dr. Jason Leong. And now, Jason, men's mental health.
All right, okay. So first of all, it's not that serious.
Sounds it.
Well, okay. But the thing is, in the past couple of months, I've had a few friends who I won't name, men who are having... mental health issues, namely depression. Okay, and the reason why I highlight mental health and men, not to say women don't suffer from mental health issues, of
deep
course,
breath.
Right?
Deep breath.
That's an important disclaimer. But in the sense that I find that in this day and age, mental health issues are very important, but men seem to have this stigma attached to it. Either they attach the stigma themselves or society attach the stigma towards men. Like, they're afraid to speak out. They're afraid to talk to their friends about it, you know, because there's always like, they feel that if a man has mental health issues, he is not man enough. He is not tough enough. He's not strong. He's not a real man, you know. And I'm trying to use this platform to tell people that there's no such thing. You know, mental health is... mental issues cross genders and race and religion. Everyone is susceptible to mental health issues. And most importantly, these people, not just men, these people with, say, depression doesn't have overt symptoms. You won't be able to tell if the people who have depression unless they tell you or their friends tell you, you know. Like I had a friend who... he was just, you know, listless. He was like, oh, I don't know what to do. Why bother doing this? Why bother going to work? I don't feel like going to work. And after a few months of talking to me and me trying to encourage him, I realized, hey, dude, I think you are depressed. Mm. You know, you need to see someone or talk to someone. And after talking about it with his friends, myself included, he sort of like broke through the clouds and go, oh, you know what? I have been having this depression. I'm going to work on it. And what he did was he went exercising. He engaged with friends. He went out with friends more. I have another friend who was like, he had suicidal thoughts. He like, you know, I just, sometimes I do think about ending it. Right. Mm. And to me, with some knowledge of medicine, that was like a red flag,
trigger.
A warning sign. Like, okay, this, you know, like, if this guy says, I've thought about ending it, even though he was joking about it, he was like, you know, yeah, I think I'm going to go.
Yeah, take it seriously.
Yeah, I was like immediately, okay, alarm bells ringing. I said, okay, this is very important. This is very dangerous because this is suicidal ideation, right? And the next step is suicidal planning. Like he might plan on how to end his life. So I said, okay, you need to speak to someone. And I referred him to a friend of mine who is a psychiatrist. And even initially, he was like very resistant. He was like, nah, you know, I don't have time. I don't have the money. But then he will seek other people. For example, he went to see like a motivational speaker, or he went to speak to a traditional medicine specialist or whatever, right? Anything else besides a psychiatrist, because there is that stigma, oh, if I go see psychiatrist,
I'm crazy.
Apakah orang sakit jiwa?
Yeah.
That means I am sakit jiwa. But that phrase is unfortunate anyway.
But Jason, the just talking then. So is talking, in your opinion, a cure in itself?
Oh, yes, because that is actually a very important start. No? Mm. A lot of these patients, I would say, they didn't even have anyone to speak to them. And more like the friends who I spoke to, I mean, luckily on their behalf, the friend that they spoke to me has a degree or a background in medicine, right? So that's one. And number two, I told my friends who are suffering from this, I said, look, there is no judgment. Right? Mm. I'm not going to judge you as a lesser being because you go and see someone for your mental health issues. You know, like, no judgment, nothing, just go. You know, you know what I mean?
I think when you mention about people coming up to your friends, appearing listless, you know, feeling like, oh, I don't know what to do in my life, that kind of thing. I think if you are a friend and if you're hearing this from your friends and it's been ongoing for a period of time, let's say a few months, don't just say, it's okay. You know, actually listen. Sit down and say, what's going on?
Why is
it that you're feeling this way? You know, if you keep rubbishing that person or just trivializing that person, you're normalizing it for him. That, you know, he's just, yeah, la, you feel like this, everyone feels like that once in a while, you know. But if it's been ongoing for a while, there's something wrong there. There's something there.
If I may contribute, I mean, there are so many useless or not helpful things to say. For example, like from a man's perspective, hey, man up, bro. Yeah,
suck it up.
Yeah, suck it. You'll get through this. You know? And then another really unhelpful thing is, hey, man, you know, I felt that way once. I'm like, no.
It's not about you.
No, it's not about you now. Who cares? You know what I mean? Like, so many things. And the hardest thing, I think, just to like listen and go, okay, what's going on? Why do you feel this way? These are all open-ended questions. Why do you feel this way? How long has this been going on? You know, and eventually, after a while, be a listening ear and a shoulder to cry on. And then after that, refer your friend to someone who is more qualified. Yeah. Right? Now, I'm a lapsed doctor. I've not been a doctor for 6 years. I would never pretend to be qualified to be a counselor or a therapist or even a psychiatrist. So I refer my friends to other people, psychiatrists mainly, who will then have the best knowledge and best judgment. And the friend I spoke, the friend who had depression, he eventually saw a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist then prescribed him some medication and then referred him to a psychologist. Mm-hmm. And these are all very important steps which we need.
But Jason, can I ask you a real kind of technical thing?
Go.
So if a person wants to contact somebody,
right,
and you know there's a psychiatrist, psychologist, you Google lots of psycho this, psycho that.
Right.
Where's the place to go to? Where do you begin?
Okay, I think the two main branches are psychiatrists and psychologists, right? Yeah. The main thing is to speak to someone qualified. Now, psychologists, they are trained in psychology and counseling techniques and so on and so forth. A psychiatrist is a medical doctor who specialized in psychiatry.
But I mean, literally Googling. I mean, so just choose the first one.
I'm not sure, but I think either or is fine. You know why? Because a good psychologist.
I think to talk, go to a psychologist. To get medication, go to a psychiatrist. If talking is not enough, go and see a psychiatrist. I think what people need to know as well, that depression does not necessarily stem from a trauma.
No,
like somebody dying, like you losing your job, or you know, a bad breakup. It can literally be an imbalance of chemicals in your brain, and sometimes the only thing that can help is medication, and it's fine. It's fine. It's like you having a stomach problem. You see a gastroenterologist, right?
Thank you.
So if you have been feeling down for so long, if you think of ending your life, when you do realize there's nothing wrong with my life, there's just something wrong with you physically. That needs to be seen to by a medical professional. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with you. It's just that you have a disease, and that's fine.
And also the medication, what it gives you is the opportunity to not be overwhelmed by these issues, and instead be able to actually focus on things on a very practical level.
To have a clear mind.
But Azura, the premise, though, that Jason began with, that you know, men face this particular thing, I'm not sure if there is any difference in men and women facing?
I think in terms of stigma, I think in terms of seeking help, I think that it's just exactly the same. Mm-hmm. There might be a difference in women in the sense that, you know, women naturally mirror with each other. You know, we talk a lot with each other about our struggles a bit more. Whereas I do find that with my guy friends, they like to flex a little bit, show about how well they are doing as opposed to talking about how things are not going so well. Do you know what I mean? So that's the difference, I think. I think with women, we talk a bit more with each other about the bad stuff that we are going through. That kind of ruin your water face, lah, right?
So that is very true.
right?
Mm-hmm. That is absolutely true.
Okay. Yeah. Mm. So, well, this has been a public service announcement.
No, I mean, we try to help here, don't we?
and Jason did start by saying it's not going to be that heavy, and it was, but that's good. So we're going to have to move on, though, folks, and we move on to the final part of the show, recommendations. Recommend something that might be of interest. And I think, actually, my recommendation, I'm going to go first, might actually connect with what you were saying, Jason, and indeed what you have been talking about as well. I have started watching this PBS show, Public Broadcasting Service, American documentary, presented by a neurologist or a neuroscientist by the name of David Eagleman.
Wow.
Have you heard of him, Jason?
No, unfortunately.
I think you'd like this. He's and so his show, which is very simply, it's called The Brain with David Eagleman. He talks about brain and the all these neuro pathways and how a brain develops how it develops from the age of, you know, 0 to 2 and then 2 to 5 and what's going on with the brain. And how we live, for instance, we are social animals, and perhaps we could look at us as being part of one collective brain. So that I Azura, I don't know your friends, I've never met your friends, but I know you, and you have been conditioned by your relationship with your friends. So in a way, I do know your friends.
All right. Scary.
Yeah. And then we're all reacting to each other. We have all these ways of instantaneously sort of like recognizing each other and making assessments. So it's a really great show, and he really sort of like delivers it in such a way that I completely understand it, although I cannot remember a thing of it as soon as it's finished. But he's really good.
Wow.
It's The Brain with David Eagleman. I think you'd like it, Jason.
Okay.
Wow. Okay, so that's mine. Azura.
My recommendation is to do nothing.
Okay.
All right? And that literally means do nothing. Just stare at, you know, I don't know, outside of your window or at your wall. You don't even have to meditate. Just do nothing. Be alone with your thoughts. And
guilt-free, though.
Guilt-free as well. You know, don't feel like you have to, like, run a mile after that or, like, I don't know, do the laundry after that. Just do nothing. And don't feel like you have to enrich your mind by watching a documentary or reading up some poetry.
A bit of confrontation.
You know, but just do nothing and see what it does for you.
The journey to trying to make these things guilt-free, that's the hard part.
Yes, though. Exactly.
Oh, yeah, so you have to go through so many processes.
You need to practice it.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Jason.
Okay, I have two recommendations. One is a shameless plug, and the other is an actual recommendation. Uh-huh. The first one, the shameless plug, is to check out our last tour of the Malaysian Association of Chinese Comedians.
Woo.
Yeah, the MACC. Last one. Ooh. So get your tickets at www.maccmaniax.com. Okay.
Maniax, okay.
I guarantee you the comedians are really, really good. Chihu, I'm not so sure, but we try.
And you happen to be one of them, of course.
Yes, okay. And then the second one is this. There's this podcast which my friend introduced to me. It's so funny. It's called The Dollop. Okay. D-O-L-L-O-P. And it's run by these two comedians, right? One of them is a history buff, okay? So the history buff tells a historical fact or a story, okay? For example, the one that got me interested was an episode of America's first ever official ghost sighting, right? And then, so the other comedian is just, he reacts to whatever the history buff tells him, like the story, which are all true stories. And it's just so funny and it's so interesting. I was riveted for 1 hour. So go and check out The Dollop. It's a great podcast.
You had me at History Buff.
Yes.
And comedian.
Yeah. And mostly, it's mostly American history.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the other episode I listened to was this. It was talking about this guy. I think his name was Ruth, who is a very famous basketball player. Oh, it could be Rube. The Rube. Right. Okay. It's a guy named Rube. Rube. Very good baseball player.
Okay, but make your mind up.
baseball. But
is
he was
Babe Ruth?
No, it's not. It's the Roop. Baseball player, really good, but he was a bit simple-minded.
Uh-huh.
So it's a story of his shenanigans while being a really good baseball player. So you should check out The Dollop.
Okay, The Dollop. And before you go, Jason, I want a bit more information about your last ever MACC tour.
Yes.
So when are the dates for this?
Okay, so we are starting tour on the 12th of September in Penang. and we tour all the way. We do 4 cities in Australia, Singapore, Hong Kong, ooh, 5 cities in Malaysia, and then ending in Kuala Lumpur on the 15th and 16th of November at HGH Convention Centre. Tickets are already 60%, if not 70% sold.
Ooh, okay.
15 November, that's my birthday. Do I get a free ticket?
Can. And I'll just do nothing about that request.
Good.
The dish.
Okay, well, that neatly brings us to the end of this week's show. Only remains for me now to thank special both of you honored guests, Azura Rahman, Jason Young.
Thank you.
And myself, Cam Raslan. And please, well, I'm not going to say like our Facebook page because I want you to do nothing. I don't want to tax you like that. So take it easy, folks. Guilt-free, bit of culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.